Rabbi Brenowitz, how are you doing, sir?
Good to see you too, sir.
Yeah, good evening, everybody. Again, I just want to finish up a little bit more about Volozhin, because again, although the so-called Musar movement, or the Tnuas HaMusar, did begin before Volozhin closed, since in Volozhin itself it was not a Musar yeshiva, and Volozhin was the Aim HaYeshivos, as it was called, so Musar did not become a big, big movement until after the closing of Volozhin. So I want to talk a little bit about Volozhin first. Again, Volozhin had the strong shita that through the Limud HaTorah, Be'iyun, and Bahasmada, that would combat all of the different Zeramim, whether it was Zionism or Communism or Haskalah generally. Again, reform had no meaning in Lithuania, because you know, you either accepted Torah or you didn't. There was no concept of making up some you know, makeshift religions. And that was the shita in Volozhin. Certainly, that was the brisker shita. That was Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim was the shiva in Volozhin. So I wanted to go talk a little bit about Volozhin, and in particular the relationship between the two Rosh Yeshivas. So very, very interesting. Volozhin was a yeshiva for almost 100 years, not quite 100 years. But its glory period was the 50 years of the Netziv. That's where it became the greatest and most famous yeshiva. And of those 50 years, the greatest were the 12 years where the Netziv was the head Rosh Yeshiva and Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was the junior Rosh Yeshiva, who had married the Netziv's granddaughter. As we indicated, they had very, very different drachim. The Netziv's Derech HaLimud was focused on an unmatched Bekiyas, B'chalot Terekulim, like some people have said, and I don't know if you could really say it that way, who can say, that the Netziv was considered to be the last Gadol who knew Kol HaTorah Kula, every single aspect of Torah. Again, I don't know how we can make such judgments. The Netziv was a Mishunitik Amasmid. People went up to the Netziv and they once asked him, I heard that the Rebbe, the Rashiva, learns 18 hours a day. The Netziv says, no, I only learned 16 hours a day before I became Rosh Yeshiva. Once you become Rosh Yeshiva, you can't do that. And he said that I learned 16 hours a day for more than 20 years, and that included Erev Shabbos and Erev Yom Tov and Shabbos and Yom Tov. He says 16 hours a day. And since the Netziv said on himself, although we don't know if that's true either, that he was not naturally a Baal Kishrin, So in effect, we are given almost a direct message that if you learn 16 hours a day for 20 years, no matter how average you might be, you will be the Nitziv. So imagine somebody tells you, I will tell you how you could be the Nitziv of a Lashon. Mamish, this is all you have to do. Simple enough. Well, it's hard to judge. You know, it's hard to judge. You know, you can't choose a bigger gadol, who's not a bigger gadol, etc. But I can assure you, this is a devar pasha. If you learn 16 hours a day for more than 20 years, you will be a very, very chashuv Talmud Chacham. That much is almost batuach. You know the famous story. There is the Nitziv used to tell this story. When the Nitziv wrote a number of svarim, and you can see already that the Nitziv's derech is somewhat unusual because his most famous sefer, or his first sefer that he published, is the sefer Hamik Sheila. Now Hamik Sheila is on the Sheiltas of Rav Achai Gaon. It wasn't a sefer that many people were learning. The Sheiltas is a very important sefer. It actually is the first sefer of halacha after the Chasima of the Gemara. Mamish is the first. It's like 100 years after the period of the Amoraim. And the Nitziv wrote the Perish Hamik Sheila on the Sheiltas of Rav Achai Gaon. And of course, the Nitziv uses that as the springboard for discussions of sugyas, Rishayim, Achrayim, Bavli, Yerushalmi. This is the thing. But he was very rare. It was very rare in the world of Talmidei Chachamim that they spent time on inyonim like Tosefta, Yerushalmi, Gaonim. They were not learned that much. The Nitziv did it. So when the Nitziv made his siyum, when he finished the sefer Hamik Shaila, he made a very, very big seuda. And the people asked him, it's a big simcha, but what is the unusual simcha? So he said he now knows that in Shemayim he will have a teretz, because he says when he was 11 or 12, apparently this is what he says, he was not so masliach, or he was not learning with Starkite. So we once overheard his parents discussing that Hirsch Leib, this Naftali Tzvi was called Hirsch Leib in Europe, Hirsch Leib is not learning that well, we should apprentice him to be a shoemaker. And he overheard that, and that really bothered him so much. He started sobbing and crying, and he begged his parents to give him another chance. And they let him learn, and eventually he became the Nitziv. The Hasmada started even before Bar Mitzvah. So the Nitziv said, imagine if I would have become a shoemaker. And I would have been, I would have done mitzvahs, I would have been a shomer mitzvahs, I would have been koveya itim l'torah, I would have gone to a shir, and I would have lived, I would have gotten married, I would have had children, I would have been a good balabas in the town. And after Me'ev Yesrim Shana, when I thought I fulfilled my chiyuv, the Midas Adin is going to say, why didn't you write the Hamik Shaila? And I'll say, me write the Hamik Shaila? I'm a shoemaker. What do I know? What are you asking me to do? No, you had that kayach in you. So the Nitziv says, the Chalapachas, I know that at least I was Makayim that particular inyan. Again, it's a Marid Dekazach, that all of the things that we could have done that we're not even aware that we were able to do. Some say that's actually Gehenim. Some Svarim say Gehenim is the Eibishter shows us what we could have accomplished with our lives. Now, in Brisk, they tell a bit of a nasty joke. I don't know if I should tell you this, but it's a sharp joke. You know, Brisk Day doesn't like a lot of different svarim that people write. So they say, on some of these svarim, after Meir V'Yeshem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to ask him, where are the shoes he should have been making? Okay, that's the Brisker joke. But okay, but this is the Nitziv. So the Nitziv's derech was a derech of tremendous, tremendous tekiyas. But again, not a superficial bekiyas. I mean, the bekiyas where he uses Mamori Chazal in Tesefta, Yerushalmi. In fact, even if you look at the Perish of the Nitziv on the Haggadah, which is a very, very nice sefer, not easy to understand.
Yemei Shefer,
you'll see that the Nitziv will bring a raya on a shayla of Morer. And he has a little paragraph on what do you eat for Morer. He'll bring a raya from a Tesefta in Uktzen. As to, you know, what is the, you know, this is the Nitziv. The Nitziv Mamish brought from Kol HaTayra Kula he could bring to bear. But Rav Chaim, we know, Patafka, although Rav Chaim was Vare Abaki in Gan Shas very, very well, very clear. But Rav Chaim emphasized the deepness, the depth of the Swara, Rav Chaim's Derech. And as I say, Rav Chaim attracted most of the Eloyim, although they say Rav Shimon Shkat who later became, he and Reb Baruch Ber were the two greatest Rosh Hashivas of Europe before World War II. Reb Shimon Shkup was a Talmud in Volozhin, and he was initially attracted to Reb Chaim. He liked Reb Chaim, Reb Chaim's depth, Reb Chaim's amkas, although Reb Shimon had developed eventually a slightly different derech. But after a while, he was mechaber back to the Netziv. What was the Maisa? Because he says the Netziv lived in the yeshiva. The Netziv's house was connected to the yeshiva. And Volozhin had a Messiah that the Koil Torah had to go for 24 hours. There were mishmaris. The Beis Medrash was never bottled. Even Maisa Yom Kippur, and if there was nobody in the Beis Medrash because they were eating, the Netziv would learn in the Beis Medrash. There was a Messiah from Rav Chaim Volozhiner that the Koil Torah has to go 24 hours. So the Netziv would pop in different times. He would pop in 2 in the morning, and then 3 in the morning, and 4 in the morning, because the Netziv just slept very, very, you know, kind of like the grudge, just very little bit at a time. So Rav Shimon Shkup, as a bachar, once asked the Netziv a shaila about a Rashbam in Bava Basra, a Shver Rashbam. And the Netziv said, there were so many hours I was mishtateach, I was mispalel at the kever of Rav Chaim Volozhiner, that Hashem should be yoyer einai to understand this Rashbam. And Rav Shimon saw that someone, you know, people go to a kever, you're mispalo for a chayla, you're mispalo for that. To the Netziv, this was a matter of pikuach nefesh. He saw the avas taira of the Netziv. And he said, you know, whether this is my derech or not my derech, I have to connect myself to the gadol that has this type of avas taira. It is recorded that anyone that heard the Netziv say Ava Rabba in the morning was changed that day. Just hearing the Netziv say the bracha of Abba Rabba was a tremendous hashpah. So I think I mentioned that initially the Netziv was Korosh Hashiva with the Beis Halevi. And then the Beis Halevi was nostalgic after a difficult din Torah, unfortunately. But Shalom was made when Rav Chaim married the Netziv's granddaughter. By the way, the middle person is Rafal Shapiro. So you have the Netziv. The Netziv's daughter married Rav Rafal Shapiro, who was Rosh Shiva for Lashon a short time, then became a Rav in Vilkamir, and then Rav Chaim came. Beis Halevi was in Brisk. When Beis Halevi died, Volozhin closed, and Rav Chaim went to Brisk. But I'll tell you one maisa. You know, one of the minhagim in Volozhin was that every bachur in the yeshiva was invited to spend the siddurim, the 2 siddurim with the Netziv. So many bachurim wouldn't go home for Pesach. They bedafka wanted to stay in yeshiva, because they went to the Netziv Siddur. And we have writings from all the Tekufas over 50 years. Rav Kook was a Talmud. Rav Kook was closer to the Netziv than to Rav Chaim. Interestingly enough, Zionism, all those different things, the attitudes of less of a Hanoi. So they all write about the Seder in Volozhin and how gevaldik it was, how, you know, there would be hundreds and hundreds of people. Everybody got a free gift. They got the Hamik, they got the Imre Shefer, the Netziv Sagoda. But they say that when the Netziv would say over the Torah, Eino Daima Shemiya L'Riya, the other way around, the hearing the Torah was much better than even reading the Torah. And they talk about the Simcha, and they mamish went until the morning. Rabbi Seinu Higiyazman Kriyashma Shol Shachar. Sometimes they ate the Afikamin before Chatzai, sometimes they didn't. The Netziv held Befrat on the second day. There was less of a Chiyuv. And then on the way to the Beis Medrash, all the Beis Medrash was right there, but they would dance in the street, and they would have a rikud. So the Netziv once said as a joke,
they didn't have the Avi Nezer, you have to be Sarukha.
That's right, they didn't have the Avi Nezer, so it's not, right, yeah, that's right. So the Netziv once said the nafkamina between his Pesach and the Beis Halevi's Pesach. Very, very, it's a little bit of a sharp report. He said, the Beis Halevi goes through all of Pesach with a terror. Chas v'shalom, there may be a chisaron of chametz. And really, briskers have a tremendous dilemma. Because on one hand, they want to be machmer in shiurim, right? Eat a big shiur. On the other hand, their chayshish, that's chas v'shalom, their matzah may be chametz. Because if you think about it, the most likely, I mean, listen, potatoes aren't chametz, right? Carrots aren't chametz. What meichel of Pesach is shayach to be chametz? Matzah. So Memela, the briskers are marbe in the sheer matzah at the Seder, but they come out, don't eat any matzah the rest of Pesach. They're mamish, mitzamsa mamish, because of a chashash chametz. So the Beis Halevi, he says, is a nervous wreck. The Beis Halevi is worried that if he eats too much masa, he's around chametz. If he eats too little masa, he's not mekayim the shir. And he's looking around. And finally, when Pesach is over, Baruch Hashem, we made it. Baruch Hashem, hopefully, we got through. He says, the Beis Halevi doesn't have Zman Cheruseinu. Pesach is an avdus and a shibud. He says, with us, it's lehepach. We do mitzvahs and we have simcha and we have cheres and ben cheres. All right, this is enough for me. Okay. But be it as it may, Rav Chaim and the Nitziv, within the same yeshiva, they had very, very different hashkafas. Both, obviously, the primacy of Limud HaTorah. Both had the shita. Not connected Musr so much, but that Musr was not needed because the Iker was Limud HaTorah. The Drachim of Limud was very different. The Nitziv was also more tolerant or accepting of things like Zionism. Rav Chaim was an absolute Kanoi. In fact, the MS is, Baruch Hashem, Rav Chaim didn't get all the information he wanted. Rav Chaim had heard that there was a group of Talmidim of Elazar that were organizing a secret Zionist group. And he demanded, he called a bacher who he thought knew had the information. He says he demanded the bacher to say who these people are because he's going to kick them out. They can't be in the yeshiva. The bacher said he can't be megala because he made a shavua not to be megala. Rav Chaim said that is a nishva levatalis hamitzvah. It's ki'ilu. You made a shavua to be over in the Torah. You break your shavua. Now, I don't know why the Nitziv didn't intervene on this. And the Bacher was not Megala. Now, the reason why I say it's very, very lucky, because Me'achure HaPargut, it is rumored that the Zionist organizers were none other than Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein, who later became the great Rosh Hashiva of Slobodka, and had he been kicked out of Elazar, who knows what he would have become. I mean, Chas v'Shalom, would he have become Theodore Herzl's assistant or something? So, Baruch Hashem, they were not Megala. But Rav Chaim was a great Kanoi. But the thing about Rav Chaim that people don't understand is, he was a great Kanoi, Lagabe Zionism. He thought it was his chabrus with Rishayim. He thought it was Kfira. Again, the shita that Brisker Rav espoused comes from Rav Chaim. Reis Levi was before this Inyan. As opposed to the Nitziv, who was connected to Chibas Tzion. Chibas Tzion was a religious forerunner of Mizrahi. And the Nitziv was also Mechaber with Maskilim. They were into Tanakh and Diktuk. The Nitziv was interested in these Inyanim. I mentioned he read newspapers. Of course, he still learned 18 hours, 16 hours a day, you know, and the like. But Rav Chaim was a tremendous Kanoi. Secular studies, Rav Chaim was absolutely a Kanoi, that you cannot have any limudei chol, etc. But what people don't remember, is that on a one-to-one basis, Rav Chaim was an extremely gentle, kind, modest person. You wouldn't imagine it. Here you have the Eloi Shebe Eloyim, the Amkan Shebe Amkanim, the Kanoi, the Loichei Milchemes Hashem. But on his Matseva, by the way, he's buried next to the Nitziv in Warsaw. They're buried next to each other. Of all of the Tayarim, it could have said, on Rav Chaim, it calls him Isha Chesed. Both as Rav Shiva and Volozhin. In fact, the Nitziv used to make a joke. Rav Chaim was always schmoozing with people. A lot of it wasn't learning, but a lot of it was just, how are you doing? You know, you're giving Bachram Chizah. So the Nitziv used to say, Nitziv was a little annoyed sometimes. He thought it was a stickle pickle terror. Rav Chaim is always going over to people. So the Nitziv said, Rav Chaim b'tzavarei v'yasek b'tayra. You know, the Gemara's lesson is, Rei Chaim b'tzavarei. A person has a parnasa. I was going, Rav Chaim b'tzavarei v'yasek b'tayra. But it wasn't official. Rav Chaim was Rosh Shiva, but Rav Chaim was someone that was extremely, extremely kind. When he became Rav of Brisk, which is a later part of his career, women, you know, used to drop their kids. I mean, you know, if a woman was Mazana or whatever it is, they would drop kids by the house, and he would raise the kids. The Brisker Rav recount, of course, obviously his Rebbetzin worked with him, his Eishes Chayil. But the Brisker Rav recounts that sometimes he would come home, and he would have no bed to sleep in, because they gave it to Orachim, they gave it to Aniyim. He says everything in his father's house was Hefker. Everything in his father's house could be taken by anybody for any reason whatsoever. He says once his father asked him to bring him a Gemara. They had a Shemeshat. So he sees that the Gemara is not in the house. So he goes to the Beis Medrash. He sees a balabas learning from Rav Chaim's Gemara. So the Brisker Rav says, my father would like his Gemara. So the person says, well, tell your father I'm using it right now. What do you want?
Yeah.
He says, you know, and this is, and the Brisker Rav says that everything was hefzer because Rav Chaim, and when there was a fire in Brisk, shortly before World War I, so Brisk had a lot of wooden buildings, so many, many people were in the street, particularly the Aniyim. Rav Chaim moved out of his house and he slept in the street because he said he is not going to move into his house until they're masak in the houses of the Aniyim, because he thought otherwise people would delay, they'd be ma'acher, the Aniyim. He said he is sleeping outside until they're masak. So Rav Chaim's kindness was very unusual, and I'll tell you this was recognized even not only by from people in Brisk and even in Volozhin, even the people who became the apikorsim, the bialiks of the world. Even in Brisk, there were communists and all sorts of people who were anti-religious even. Everybody was makir two things about Rav Chaim. Three things about Rav Chaim. Number one, his brilliance. He always got to the Zach, no matter what. Number two, his honesty. And number three, his kindness. And I'm talking about you know, people who were not Shomer Shabbos. So it's a very, very interesting thing that in spite of the fact that he was such a Fabreter Kanoi on these issues and the individual way he related to people was mamish kindness. And I'll tell you who was a very interesting Eid Re'iyah. You know, the Netziv had two sons that are very well known. The oldest son from his first marriage was Rav Chaim Berlin, who was the Rav of Moscow and eventually came to Yerushalayim, and he became the Sagan based in Yehoshua Leib Diskin's basin. So he was a bit of a Kanoi, like Yehoshua Leib Diskin, who actually was the Rav in Brisk before the Beis HaLevi. So that was Rav Chaim Berlin. So Rav Chaim Berlin, in our parlance, is the from one of the Netziv. But the Netziv had a second son from his second wife, who's the Aruch HaShulchan's daughter. The Netziv is both the Aruch HaShulchan's brother-in-law from his first wife, they married sisters, and his son-in-law from the second wife. He married the Aruch HaShulchan's daughter. And that second son was Rav Meir Berlin, who was a Talmud Chacham, a person who learned very well. But Rav Meir Berlin became very involved in the Zionist movement, became head of Mizrahi, and he changed his name to Rav Meir Bar Ilan, the street that's a few blocks away, and indeed he is buried in the Beis HaKvaris here in Sanhedria, Morchevet, or in Sanhedria Cemetery, Beis HaKvaris, Rav Meir Bar Ilan. Now Rav Meir Bar Ilan was of course a very, very firm person, but obviously his hashkafos in life were very different than Rav Chaim. But he wrote a two-volume, actually it was taken from newspaper columns in Yiddish, but they published two volumes called Mi Volozhin Ad Yerushalayim. And he was around 12 years old when Volozhin was closed, so he never really learned in Volozhin. But he, the first 12 years, until his bar mitzvah, he was around Volozhin all the time. That's where he was. And he describes Rav Chaim, it's very interesting, he was a kid. And he describes his relationship to Rav Chaim as a child, and it's really a very, very warm relationship. How Rav Chaim treated children, how he used to be like a horse. You know, he would get on his knees and his arm, you know, and hands, and kids would ride on him. And people thought it wasn't even lefi chavayda. Number one, when even then he was a Rashiba Volozhin, and he did the same thing when he's a Rav in Brisk. He had no sense of personal kavod. He didn't dress like a Rav. He dressed like a regular Pashut Abalabas. And he even had alumnus. He said when he's traveling, he says he's not a Rav. In Brisk, he's a Rav, so he has to dress a certain way. He says when he's not in Brisk, he's not a Rav, so he can dress any way he wanted. So one has to understand that there's another side to the personalities here. So the relationship...
Meir Bar-Ilan's father passed away when he was only 13.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Meir Bar-Ilan had school?
Yeah, he founded it. Rav Meir Bar Ilan, first of all, he was obviously he was a Shomer Mitzvos Mitzchila V'Atzayif. He was from He was a Talmud Chacham. He was the Yodea. He was the Yodea Sefer. Interestingly enough, a bit, little trivia, if you were aware, his son-in-law is Rabbi Shaul Lieberman. Okay, that's also a whole interesting story in and of itself. But Mary Lott's son-in-law is Shaul Lieberman. As the conservatives like to call him, Hagrash Lieberman. But okay, the one possible guy that the conservative movement may have produced. But Rav Lieberman is from Slobodka. He's a Talmud of Slobodka. He was a chaver of my Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Ruderman and Rav Flickner, all of those, Rav Aaron, all of those people. Rav Meir Ilan was very definitely a Talmud Chacham, but he was, and he took the Zionism from the Nitziv, but he took it to new heights or new lows, new heights, whatever you want to call it. But it's very, very fascinating to see how a child, not a little child, but a boy, 10, 11, 12, described a relationship with Rav Chaim. Just very, very different than we might imagine Rav Chaim to be. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky writes that, in the pictures of Rav Chaim, you see that he wears glasses. But he says Rav Chaim really didn't need glasses. But his eyes were so big and piercing that people were afraid. You were afraid to look at him. So he wore the glasses to cover up the looking of his eyes, because there was such brilliance, such intelligence, such depth. It was mamish like a pachad. Like Moshe Rabbeinu had to have a masveh because of the Karan or Panav. So Rav Chaim also had to have a shtickle bit of a masveh. But they do tell an interesting maaser with the Nitziv and Rav Chaim, just to show you a little bit, that Rav Chaim had tremendous coverage for the Nitziv, and although Lemaisa, it is true that the Bachrim gravitating to Rav Chaim hurt the Nitziv a little bit, because the Nitziv was, Mafsid Talmidim, and people were going to Rav Chaim more than the Nitziv, but there was tremendous love between them, and Rav Chaim always gave tremendous cover to the Zaydi, as he called the Nitziv. So the story goes that Maitzei Shemitah, during Sukkot, the Nitziv was using an esrog for Eretz Yisrael. And there's always going to be a shaila next year about being Maitzei Peiros Shviyas, may Eretz Yisrael b'chutz la'aretz, and we make a bracha. So the Nitziv made a bracha, and he wanted, in Europe, people didn't have your own esrogim. You had to usually borrow, the first day would be Matan al Menas L'Hachzer. People didn't have their own esrogim. So the Nitziv wanted Rav Chaim to make a bracha, and Rav Chaim was mishamed. Rav Chaim said, I'll do it later. And the Nitziv was margish that Rav Chaim held there was a shayla. So Rav Chaim went home after, and then the Nitziv spent the whole night looking at Svarim. He had like 30 Svarim to be machriya l'chalutin, that's l'gamri mutter. And he told one of his children, go to Rav Chaim, go to Rav Chaim, tell him to come over. I want to sell him, it's mutter l'gamri. So they knock at the door, Rav Chaim's already asleep, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. Rav Chaim is asleep, and the person wakes him up because he says, the Nitziv wants you. So Rav Chaim, Chas V'Shalom, doesn't know what's going on. Is there sickness? Is there chayli? So he gets up very, very quickly, and he runs, and he says, Zaydi, is everything okay? He says, yeah, Baruch Hashem, I just want to tell you, I went through the sugya. So Rav Chaim said, let me make Birchas HaTorah. So the Nitziv starts crying. He says, I never imagined that my granddaughter would marry somebody who at 4 o'clock in the morning hasn't yet made Birchas HaTorah. What's Shaykh? You mean you went to sleep without being Mavara the Shaila? How is it even Shaykh? And the Nitziv started crying. Alright, so this is the idea of the Avas HaTorah between these great Anokim. So the emes is, when you have that type of Avas HaTorah, maybe you don't need a limud of Musar. The Torah indeed is purified here. But the emes is, most people are not on that madrega, and that's where Rabbi Israel comes in. But I do want to tell you I apologize for the Maisim, but I think through the Maisim, you get a sense of who these people are, and that's very kedai, because just like David HaMelech says, V'hayu einecha rayais p'nei mayrecha, that when your eyes should see your teacher. And Rav says, the reason why I am sharper than my chaverim is because when I was a young man, I saw Rav Yehuda HaNasi from the back. And if I would have seen him from the front, I would have even been greater. So even though we're not zeichet to see the gedolim beguf, these gedolim beguf, but when we know about them a little bit more, then we have at least a mental image of who they are. And it's important to also see the midas. In other words, that one should know that Rav Chaim was exceptionally great in his midah of chesed. In fact, the Velt says, who said it? It's a famous statement. I don't know who said it. That there are two gedolim that the world undervalues. Everyone knew the Chafetz Chaim as a tzaddik and less as a gain, and they knew Rav Chaim as a gain and less as a tzaddik. But in fact, the Chafetz Chaim was even a greater gain than he was a tzaddik, and Rav Chaim was a greater tzaddik than he was a gain. The Velt does not appreciate those aspects of it. So I'll tell you another mice about this. Now this is a little bit, this is a little lumdisha, but I'm going to tell you this as part of your limud hatayra that you should know. Rav Chaim was once at a sheva brachas with Rabbi Eliezer Gordon, who was the Rav and the Rosh Hashiva of Telf. He was the Miyasid of Telf. And they were talking in learning, they were talking in lumdis, etc. So there was a Pailash Rav who, you know, he was a little irritated that they're not discussing halacha l'maisa. So he keeps on saying, "Nu, and what's with halacha l'maisa? Nu, you're doing lumdus and lumdus and chakiras. Why don't you do halacha l'maisa?" And he kept on saying, every time they were going into svar, he says, "What about halacha l'maisa?" So at some point, Rav Chaim got a little impatient because this was going on the Friday night, they're going on Shabbos, it was going on Suda Shalishas. So finally, at Suda Shalishas, Rav Chaim said to him, okay, you're right. We should focus on halacha l'maisa. Let me give you a shaila that happened in Brisk, and you tell me what the halacha is going to be. I hope I'll remember this because it's a maisa in a lot of levels. This was a maisa. Again, it starts off as a relatively simple shaila that there was a non-Jewish cook in the house. Again, there was no shaila bishalakim, you know, a Jew turned on the fire. And the non-Jewish cook was making meat, but she had brought her own treif meat to give to the cats. She had a piece of treif raw meat to give to the cats. But by accident, the treif meat fell into the pot, and then everything spilled, the liquid spilled, so we don't know if there was shishim in the pot or not. It's a suffix if there's shishim or not shishim. If there's shishim, the isser is batel. If there's not shishim, then everything is usser. So what do you do when you have a suffix, whether it's shishim or not? So the Rav said, that's an obvious question. Because meat and meat, even if it's nevela bishchuta, is what we call min b'minei. And in Siman Tzadik Ches, there is a halacha that says that min b'minei d'araisa is batel chad b'trei. You don't need shishim. You only need shishim by min b'sheino mina. So if you have pachos mishishim by min b'minei, it's only an isur d'rabbanan. So if for sure you had a raif, but you're masupik if you have shishim, by min b'mina, it's a safek iser drabanan, and a safek iser drabanan, you go lakula. If it would be min b'shein o mina, it would be a safek iser d'araisa. But this is a safek iser drabanan. So the Rav said, davar pashit, min b'mina, safek iser drabanan, safek drabanan lakula. So Rav Chaim said, that's very good, but what about the fact that if this was meat that the Mishareshes brought into the house, it probably was not salted. So in addition to the Yisr Nevela and Shechuta is Min B'minai, but Dam and Shechuta is Min B'Shein O'Mina. So whilst the Dam Shebai, it's a Min B'Shein O'Mina, in which D'Araisa you need Shishim. And if it's a Suffolk of Yav Shishim, it should be Usher. What about that? So the Rav said, oh, you're right, I forgot about the dam. Because of the dam, it's min b'she'en o'minai, it's a suffix d'araisa. But then, says Rav Chaim, but wait a second. Even if it's dam, we paskin dam shebishlai, once the dam is cooked, it's only an isur d'rabanan. So eibazoi, even if it's min b'she'en o'minai, it's still an isur d'rabanan. Because dam shebishlai is an isur d'rabanan. So, als the shchuta bin nevela, or the nevela b'shchuta, right? It's a drabanan because you have chad betray batel, and als the dam is in a drabanan, als dam shebishlei. So if you're masubik about shishim, it should be safek diaraisa. What do you, safek drabanan? What do you say about that? So the Rav said, you're right. Even though there's dam, but it's dam shebishlei, it's a drabanan. Yeah. Then Rav Chaim said, but wait a second. Dam Shebishlai only takes off the Jerabbanan of Dam. But the Dam from a non-kav, from a Nevela, is also Aser Alf Nevela. And in Nevela, there's no heter of Bishlai. So on one hand, it's Min Bishain Omino because the Tam is different, blood is different than meat. And there's no heter of Dam Shebishlai because Legabe, the Dam Nevela, it's an Iser Diraisa. Hey, Bazoi, we have a suffix Iser Diraisa, Min Bishain Omino. You have to have Shishim. And as if you don't know if you have Shishim, it would be Aser Medrab, Aser Diraisa, suffix Aser Lachumah. So the person, oh, you're right. Dam Shebishlai is Dam, but Dam Shebishlai is not a heter for Nevela, because the Dam of a Nevela is Yaitzei, it's Yaitzei Menah Nevela. But then Rav Chaim said, but you're forgetting a Taisus in Shavuos. The Taisus in Shavuos says, it is only Dam Trefa that is called Yaitzei Menah Tameh, because that Dam was generated in the animal when it was Trefa. Dam Nevela, Taisus says, right, the animal was kosher, just Dam Nevela is only usher because of Dam. It's not usher because of Nevela. And if it's only usher because of Dam, he says, it's Dam Shebishlai, it's going to be an Isser Rabbanan. So the Maskana is going to be, it's going to be Mevzev Chaim, turned back to Elizabeth Gordon and said, that's how we paskin in Brisk. So, okay, I hope you're following. This is a bit of a complicated story, I apologize. What is important about this story is an important thing that people don't realize, a yisoid in a brisker derech of limud. The brisker derech of limud is not only, you know, an eon in thinking about deep spurus. It is also about seeing the totality of a picture. There's kind of not just mimic, you might call vertically, going down. But seeing all aspects of a shaila, right? This was not a brisker. There was no brisker svara that I gave you here. In fact, Rav Chaim basically used the same derech that the Pailish Rav would use. But it's the point of noticing things, seeing the whole picture. That's a very, very important part. In fact, Rav Chaim is such a talent. Rav Chaim had such a chush for the neshama of Torah. This is what Rav Yerucham said about Rav Chaim, that he understood the neshama of Torah. That Rav Chaim could actually be mechave to virtually every other mahalach, even if it wasn't his mahalach. Rav Chaim used to have a little game he would play. It's almost like a game. He would say, if somebody was a mechaber of a sefer, or there was a new sefer that came out, Rav Chaim says, tell me one kasha and one teretz from this mechaber. One thing. Then tell me another kasha, he asks, and I'll tell you what his teretz was. So, because Rav Chaim from one shtickle Torah saw the person's derech, and he could then be mechaber to it. In fact, they say he was talking to Rav Lezer Gordon once, and Rav Lezer Gordon told Rav Chaim a kasha. So Rav Chaim said, "Mistama, you answered like this." So Rav Lezer Gordon said, "No, I answered like this." He says, well, that's schwer, because according to your shita, you should have said this. And Lezer Gordon said, you're right, that was my, you know, and again, you know, Rav Chaim Mamish was able to almost read somebody's mind, and it wasn't because they were mechavan to his terusim, it wasn't his terusim. You know who does a similar thing? This is interesting. If you look at the Meshech Chachma, in Parshas Kisetze, you know, the Malbim wrote, the Malbim on Chumash is not really on Chumash. The Malbim on Chumash is really on the Midrashi Halacha, the Mechilta, the Tiras Kayanim, the Sifri. But the Malbim was Nifter in the middle of Parshas Kisetze. So in the middle of Kisetze, the Meshech Chachma says, Mikan v'eilech echtaiv al derech ha-Malbim. A different derech. He says, I'm going to now finish the Malbim up for the Malbim, because he was Nifter before he was able to write. Right, this was the derech of Rav Chaim, and again, very, very unique person. They tell a maisa that a Talmud of Rav Chaim left. I don't know if he became not from, but he left the yeshiva world. He became a physicist, and he worked with Albert Einstein. And when he came back to Brisk, people want to know, Rav Chaim and Einstein, how do you compare Rav Chaim and Einstein? How do you compare the two? And, you know, it's an interesting discussion now, comparing Rav Chaim and Einstein. This person held that Einstein was a bigger Mechadish, but Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said, you can't be Madame Milsel Milsel. You knew Rav Chaim when he was 21, and you knew Einstein when he was 45, and you really cannot be Madonna. By the way, it's a chaval. Einstein grew up in a assimilated German family. But before he was 13, he was toying, because he was such a rebellious kid, one of his rebellions was possibly becoming frum. Einstein was toying with becoming an Orthodox Jew. And the person who turned him away, unfortunately, it's like a Mesa Sumediach, was a Jewish medical student who was boarding with his parents. The Jewish medical student's name, of all things, was Max Talmud. The guy's name was Talmud. But he convinced Einstein to abandon it. So who knows what Einstein would have become had Einstein stayed in the yeshiva. But, you know, it all depends on your perspective. You know, what the maskilim used to do, you know, the maskilim used to look for very bright, brilliant orphans, yesonim, and offer them money to send them to secular schools and eventually to college. They would wander around the cities. And Rav Aaron Cutler was a yosim at a young age. And the maskilim had their eye on him. And it was only Rav Reuven Brzezovsky, who was his older friend, who kept him in yeshiva and took him to Slobodka and the like. So they say Rav Aaron had a sister. I don't know if she was religious or not, but she became a very famous professor of mathematics. And she died in America. And somebody said a Rav in Queens went to visit her towards the end of her life. And she was still saying, she was still upset that Rav Aaron went to yeshiva, she says. What a mathematician he could have been. Ay, 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 ay. What a mathematician. He was so gifted. So it all depends on what side of the equation that you're going in. Okay. But be it as it may, as we said last week, there are two different mesiras as to why Volozhin closed. Hakol Moedim, that the Russian government made certain demands that secular studies be imposed in the yeshiva, and Hakol Moedim that the Netziv and Rav Chaim were not maskim to those demands, and as a result the yeshiva was closed. But in the yeshiva world, and this is the Masorah of Rav Chaim Berlin, the Netziv was a misnage to any limudei chol in the miskeres of a yeshiva, and others say, the Torah Tamima says in the Makor Baruch, that the Netziv would have been maskim to an hour or 2 hours. It was just that the Russian government wanted 5 or 6 hours with no night seder. And the Netziv used an interesting mashal. The Netziv said that if you have a mayan, you have a spring, a powerful gushing spring of water that comes up, and you block the spring here, it will explode somewhere else. But if you start diluting the spring, dig a little hole here, a little hole here, so only a little bit comes out. So the Netziv said, better to close this yeshiva and let other mekaymus of Torah sprout than dilute or compromise. Right? And as they say, the debate over what this Messiah is still a debate with regarding YU and regarding Turo and regarding Limudei Chol, all of these different issues. Do we say that the tzura of a yeshiva cannot have these things? Or do we say, as long as Torah is the ikar, it's all right, you can bring in a little bit. You know, different gedolim said different things. I'll tell you another mice. You know, the Chafetz Chaim, which is later, Chafetz Chaim is after this, Chafetz Chaim was also a tremendous misnaget to Limudei Chol. He didn't even want girls, women, to learn Russian or Polish. They shouldn't. He said that was a Pesach to assimilation. And because of this, in Tsarist Russia, the maskilim got the government to pass laws that a Rav had to be familiar with Russian, Polish, had to be able to read and write. And because the standard Talmud Chacham Rav did not necessarily know these languages, every city in Europe had two Rabbanim. There was the real Rav, the Talmud Chacham, the Gadol, and then there was the Rav that was called Rav Mitam HaMemshala, the government Rav, who kept the records, who kept the birth certificates, the death certificates, who filled out government forms, and that's often abbreviated as the Rav Mitam. Sometimes the Rav Mitam was also a Talmid Chacham, but almost never of the caliber of the real Rav. And sometimes the Rav Mitam was an Am Haaretz. Sometimes the Rav Mitam was from. Sometimes the Rav Mitam was not even from. You had different things. And obviously, and if the Rav Mitam wanted to assert his authority, that created a lot of tension. Sometimes Rav Mitam was just happy to be a bureaucrat and didn't try to do anything. But when they tried to do something, the something were very, very bitter. So at a meeting of Rabbanim in St. Petersburg, which was the capital of Tsarist Russia, Rabbanim were debating, you know, maybe it's better that Rabbanim, we do educate the Chanicha Yeshivas, at least in languages, to read and write, so that way we don't have to handle with these Rav Mitam HaMimshala, all of these. So Rav Meir Simcha, the Or Sameach, felt very, very strongly that Fakert, a Rav needs to be educated in the Sfas HaMedina. We're not talking about going to college, we're talking about, you know, knowing Russian or Polish, whatever the language was, because he said two reasons. Number one, it gets rid of the very non-religious Rav Mitam that's sticking his nose into all sorts of things. And number two, it's a way of dealing with Haskalah, because the Rav could speak to young people in their language, you know, etc. And he felt it was a very good thing. The Chavetz Chaim was very misnaged to it. The Chavetz Chaim said, absolutely not. This is lepesach chatas reves. You're diluting a yeshiva. You're taking away from the primacy of Torah. You're going to produce rabbanim that are too modern and secular, and the like. So at this meeting, it turned out Rav Meir Simcha said to the Chavetz Chaim, he says, you don't know the problems of Jewish people in big cities. You come from Radin, you come from the village, you come from a tiny hick town. So you don't have people that are reading secular literature or going to cafes or going to big university libraries. You don't have any university. What are you doing, Radin? All there is a base medrash. So he says, you don't understand the pressures of dealing with youth that are doing all sorts of inyanim, where the Rav has to be able to connect to them. So the Chavetz Chaim said back to Rav Meir Simcha, he says, you don't understand what it's like to run a yeshiva, because in Tivinsk there was no, he didn't have a yeshiva. So apparently, the fact that Rav Meir Simcha, who was really a gadol hador, didn't have a yeshiva was something, I don't know why he didn't, but it was something that was very, very painful. And the Chavetz Chaim saw that Rav Meir Simcha was very hurt. In fact, Rav Meir Simcha left the meeting. He left. He didn't storm out. He left the meeting. So Rav Shach said, Rav Shach had a hara, that, you know, the Mishnah Berurah never brings from any contemporary acharon. In other words, no one that was alive in his time does he bring. Does he quote the Kesef Sefer? Well, the Kesef Sefer is very close, but he was not alive. No, you're right. But what I'm saying is, he was nifter before the those chalakim.
Shlomo Kluger was not around. He was before.
This is the generation right before. But he doesn't quote the Beis Halevi. He doesn't quote a lot of people, even though Aninyanim. Now, part of it might be Stamazai, because if he quotes some people and doesn't quote other people, there's going to be a problem. And, you know, the Velp likes to say he didn't want to quote the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan was considered to be the Gaon Hador in Hayra, but the Aruch HaShulchan has the famous Heter, that Bizman Hazeh, you're allowed to read Kriya Shema in front of the uncovered hair of a married woman. This is the Aruch HaShulchan's heter, because it's no longer stimulating, Bavin Aseinu Harabim, because we're used to it. Although it's misquoted by the modern Orthodox who say you don't have to cover your hair. That's absolutely not the case. It's just you're allowed to be covering Kriya Shema. But the Velt says the Chavetz Chaim was so incensed that even though some of the Aruch HaShulchan had come out, he wasn't going to quote it. But the one thing that he does quote is, in Hilchos Rosh Hashanah, he quotes the Or Sameach. So he quotes the Or Sameach. In fact, it's not even a halacha, it's an inyan of Agadita, but Shefer Shalayo. And Rav Shach says, Me'ayda Yiyad Akasha, why does the Chavetz Chaim quote the Or Sameach? So Rav Shach said he thought as a hashara, this was the Chafetz Chaim's bakashas mechila for being pogeya in the covenant of Rav Meir Simcha at that meeting. And Rav Shach said he spoke to Rav Mendel Zaks, who was the last surviving son-in-law of the Chafetz Chaim, and Rav Mendel Zaks said, "Yeah, that's exactly right. Chafetz Chaim was subrachid over the tsar that he caused Rav Meir Simcha." And he, of course, he was Mavakish Mechila individually as well, but he kind of wanted to be Mechabed Rav Meir Simcha. He's like the only contemporary Acharin that he actually quotes in the Mishnah Berurah.
Do you know Rav Moshe's take? Because he was in Russia too. Do you know his approach to between these two Shittas?
Which two Shittas of the secular and the... Which two Shittas?
Between the incorporating secular...
Rav Moshe, we know from his sheet in America, Rav Moshe basically said a yeshiva should not have secular studies. On the other hand, it's a mudnazach. Rav Moshe did have many, many Talmidim who went to Brooklyn College. Many, many Talmidim. Maybe most. But his sheet was that you're not machnesit in the miskeres of a yeshiva. That yeshiva does not have any limude in the chol.
Doesn't that Tshuva that clearly say college is also?
It's not Bori. He says, but there were chalutz also. But what can I tell you? I mean, we know he has many, many, many talmidim. He went to college, and he had a close schedule with them. Now again, it could be it's a matter of personality. Meaning, Rav Moshe may have held college as usher, but he was not merachik anybody for that. Even Rav Aaron, who was the biggest kanoi of American gedolim against college, had fewer than Rav Moshe, but he had people who went to college and. They were not allowed to be officially members of Lakewood, but he said, you're not part of the yeshiva, but you come and learn in the base medrash anyway, and we'll get you chavrusas.
And you're about to start RJJ, which is sort of, did allow students to...
No, Rabbi didn't know. RJJ is an old yeshiva. RJJ started in like 1898.
Oh, his
Talmidim
didn't go there?
His Talmidim did go there, yeah. Right. Well, let me put it the other way around. RJJ was the main feeder for base medrash Kavaya. People went from, I'll give you a good example. You know, the Menayel of Nei Yisrael Mechina is not alive, but they wrote a book. It was Rav Yosef Tendler, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. He's the younger brother of Rav Moshe Tendler. Rav Moshe Tendler, you know, obviously has a PhD. He went to college. He's a big proponent of Tyro Mada. Now Rav Yosef,
Rav Moshe finds his son-in-law.
That's correct. There you have it. Right? But Rav Yosef Tendler, and they all started off in RJJ. Rav Yosef Tendler, Rav Moshe Tendler. So how did Rav Yosef Tendler change? He was going to go to YU. But he wanted to go to Rav Soloveitchik Shir, the highest shir. They told him, "You're not good enough to go to Rav Soloveitchik Shir." So he said, "Okay, let me go a summer to Lakewood. I want to go to summer Lakewood, beef up my Gemara skills." You know. And after a summer in Lakewood, this is like 1959, whatever it is, I'll get into the Rav Shir. Of course, in that summer, he meets Rav Aaron Cutler. And Rav Aaron Cutler basically says, you're staying here. This is where you belong. So as a result, so what happened was, RJJ was primarily a college yeshiva. The people who went to college. But if they went to Lakewood, a lot of them changed. Rav Aaron was such a charismatic.
Didn't he go back and he came back for Simchas Torah?
I don't remember, but he didn't finish. He didn't finish college. Maybe.
Yeah, he was in Baltimore.
Baltimore. So in a way, Rav Tendler's hashgacha was near Yisrael as yeshiva allowed college, where Tendler himself was a bit to the right of the of near Yisrael as a whole. So Rav Aaron was such a fiery, charismatic personality that many, many people changed from the fire of his personality. Many, many people changed. They changed their hashgachas. So people who were from people planning to go to college, they changed. Okay. All right. So this is what you kind of need to know about Volozhin. Now, after Volozhin, what indeed happened was many, many other yeshivas either started or they had existed with Volozhin, but they became more famous and like Mir, for example. Mir is a very old yeshiva. Mir was founded shortly after Volozhin, but Mir did not become mefursim and big until after Volozhin closed. Slobodka, which maybe I'm a nogea b'davar, but Slobodka is really the forerunner of most of the American yeshivas. But Slobodka was founded in the 1880s, right before Volozhin closed. But after Volozhin closed, Slobodka kind of became the... Well, it depends, you know, yes, but on the SIT, he became the most dominant yeshiva in Europe. So I want to talk a little bit about Slobodka. Rav Chaim stayed in Volozhin till the very end. Rav Chaim was with the Nitziv when Volozhin closed. After Volozhin closed, he went to be with his father for a short time. The Beis Halevi was nifter almost right after the Nitziv, and Rav Chaim became the Rav of Brisk. And then, of course, when Rav Chaim was nifter, the last Rav of Brisk before the Holocaust was, of course, we call the Brisker Rav, Rav Yitzchak Zev, Rav Velbel, was the last Rav of Brisk, and yeah.
Is there any credibility to the, I guess, the Tzib was masking for 2 hours of learning it, but yep. Chaim was adamantly opposed to anything at all, that's what closed it down.
That makes a lot of sense to me, but I did not see that official version. As I say, Rav Chaim Berlin, Tainas, that the Nitziv said, B'Seif Yamav, do not allow any Limud Echol, and that's why I closed the Luzhin. Torah Tzimimah says the Nitziv was Moskim to 2 hours. Now, again, if you would ask me, certainly Rav Chaim Brisker would not have been Moskim, so that makes a lot of sense. On the other hand, unless Rav Chaim convinced the Nitziv, it's not clear why Rav Chaim's Hachra would be Machriya.
Because the
Bachurim
were thinking of
that. Yeah, but I don't think it was that drastic. I mean, the Nitziv had enough Talmidim that he could have had a yeshiva if he wanted to. So the Nitziv was totally Tzibrachim. The Nitziv basically, I mean, the Nitziv died of sickness, but it's pretty clear he died of heartbreak. The Nitziv did live another year and a half, mainly in Warsaw, and he was nifter, and then Rav Chaim lived for almost 20 years as Rav of Brisk, and then when he was nifter, he was buried next to the Nitziv. People ask Akasha, how come all these great rabbis are buried in Warsaw? I mean, they didn't live in Warsaw. What are they doing in Warsaw? The answer is Warsaw had the best doctors in Eastern Europe. So when Gedalim became sick, they often went to Warsaw, and that's where they died. So it's where people spent their last days. The cemetery in Warsaw, the Jewish cemetery in Warsaw, is the largest Beis HaKvaris in the world, except for Har HaZeisim, which goes back. And it's a very, very amazing thing, because you have all sorts of people there. You know, you have the Chelkas HaRabbanim, you have Rebbe Kivego, you have like the greatest Gaina Yailam, Mitziv, Rav Chaim, and you know, many, many others. And then you have these actors and actresses, and they have big, gaudy monuments, you know, like you know, 10 feet from the Mitziv, you got like, you know, some monument, the founder of Esperanto, you know, all sorts of like people. And then you have rich people who build these mausoleums. Right? So it's a very, very mixed Beis HaKvaris. You might get a big photograph of what Jewish culture was like in all of its incantations and the like. Okay, let's see what we have to. Okay. All right, so the mission next week we will definitely get to Musher, because we have to do a little more. Otherwise we're in danger of becoming like the legend. Not only Tyre, no Musher, so we have to. Okay.